Good day, and welcome to the Barratt Developments full year 2022 trading update call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to David Thomas. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us. Steven and Mike are both with me. I would like to begin by thanking our employees, our subcontractors, and our suppliers for their commitment in delivering what has been a really excellent performance in FY 2022. The housing market has remained strong across the country and throughout FY 2022. Our sales performance has reflected this strong demand with private sales rate at 0.81, 3.8% ahead of the 0.78 recorded in FY 2021. We have also seen strong underlying house price inflation, with pricing on reservations taken in the year improving by 8% across the country. Average sales outlets at 332 were 3.2% lower than the 343 in the prior year. The reduction in average outlets reflected two main factors. Firstly, the strength of our private sales rate, which has remained stronger than we anticipated throughout the year. Secondly, some planning delays on new sites where local authority resourcing and the impacts of the pandemic have created delays to some site openings. We have, however, seen sales outlet numbers recover towards the end of the year, and we ended FY 2022 with 352 active sales outlets, just six below the 358 at the end of FY 2021. Total completions at 17,908 grew 3.9% versus FY 2021. We are really delighted to have grown completions back to pre-pandemic levels, which for us was a key milestone. As we have flagged in the statement, total completions were impacted by the deferral into FY 2023 of a London apartment block of 221 homes. This reflected resource-related delays in the building control process. The positive is that we have, in any event, delivered a very strong performance in FY 2022. Our order book remains strong. Our total order book consisted of 13,579 homes, down 5.3% on the record order book at the end of FY 2021, but 4.3% ahead in value terms at 3.6 billion. I would also flag that our private order position is particularly strong, up 17.9% in value terms at 2.3 billion, and consisting of 6,108 homes ahead by 6.7% on the June 2021 position. A standout in FY 2022 has been our build performance. Our site teams and subcontractors continued to improve our build output, which reached 352 equivalent homes per week, up 13.2% on the 311 in FY 2021. Key to this impressive build rate is the attraction and retention of high-quality subcontractors, which we see as being based on three main ingredients. Firstly, creating safe, well-organized sites. Secondly, benefiting from our centralized procurement to ensure that we have security of material supply for our subcontractors. Thirdly, our increased use of standard house types as well as more timber frame construction. Our construction teams have delivered this growth in output without compromising customer service or build quality. We have been awarded 5-star by our customers for the 13th consecutive year. This is a unique achievement amongst the national house builders. And last month, we were awarded 98 Pride in the Job Awards for site management, more than any other house builder for the 18th consecutive year. Our order book, in combination with our build performance, gives us confidence in our ability to deliver further completion growth in FY23. Now on build cost inflation. As we highlighted at the interims and confirmed in May, build cost inflation was around 6% in FY22. We continued to experience upward pressure on build costs during the second half, reflecting in part the escalating energy cost backdrop that impacts production and transportation costs. We exited the year with total build cost inflation running between 9 and 10%. Our priority remains, as we've outlined before, ensuring the security of building material supplies. And we continue to work with our supply chain partners to secure sustainable but competitive pricing. The result of both our strong sales, build, and also the completion performance is that adjusted pre-tax profits will be between $1,050,000,000 and $1,060,000,000, slightly ahead of current market consensus expectations. Our financial position also remains very strong, with net cash at $1.1 billion at the year end. Just a few other points to highlight from our statement. We are absolutely committed to playing a key role in both addressing the UK's housing shortage and leading the industry around sustainability, whilst also being the industry's employer of choice. On growth, we have opened 2 new divisions in the year, Sheffield in our northern region, and Anglia based in Norwich in our east region. We will also open an additional timber frame facility in England to complement our Oregon plant in Scotland. The new plant near Derby will add significant timber frame capacity from FY24. In leading the industry on sustainability, we launched our first air source heat pump based development in Somerset, and completed the Zed House, the first beyond zero carbon house developed by a major house builder. Both are important steps as we drive towards our zero carbon homes in use target for 2030. In our drive to be the employer of choice, we recognise the cost of living issues that so many people are facing. So we brought forward our annual salary review from the 1st of July to the 1st of April, awarding a 5% increase to all eligible employees. And we recently introduced a salary supplement of £1,000 for all employees below senior management to support them over the 6 months to the 31st of December 2022. And so to outlook. There clearly continues to be a shortage of homes in the UK. Customer demand continues to be strong and mortgage availability is good. We recognise that there are significant macro uncertainties, both political and economic. But we are not complacent. We remain vigilant and we will respond to changes in the market and the wider economy as they develop over the coming months. Based on current market conditions, we expect to grow total home completions in line with our medium-term target of 3-5% in FY23. And we also continue to buy land at our minimum gross margin hurdle rate of 23% and return on capital employed of 25%. So overall, an excellent operational and financial performance, and we will now be happy to take your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, you can do so now by pressing star 1 on your telephones. Press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take our first question from Chris Millington from Numis. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Morning, David, Steve and Mike. A few, if I may. First one's just really on visibility over land and planning for FY23. You know, how much you've still got pending there and what risk may relate to that. Just aligned to that one as well, just kind of what you're thinking about outlet numbers this year. I see you've made quite a good run towards the end of the year. And then the final one's just really just on your kind of discrete trading periods over the last month or so, just what your experience has been, down valuations, cancellations, ability to keep pushing prices, and whether there's been any big regional variation there. That's all. Thank you.
Chris, hi. Good morning. So I'll pick up on the sort of discrete trading periods and talk for a moment and not really give you any more information. And Stephen will pick up in terms of land and planning where we are for FY23 and also in terms of outlets as well and our thoughts on outlets for 23. So I think in terms of discrete trading, and Chris, you'd understand that obviously we've looked at this very closely. I mean, I'm not going to start giving out numbers on a weekly or monthly basis. But I think the reality is that when you look at the numbers as we reported back in May, we have seen an improvement in terms of our trading second half compared to first half. And those trends have been pretty consistent throughout the second half of the year. So looking at customer inquiries, looking at reservation rates, we're seeing very, very strong levels of customer interest. Now, we also monitor availability of mortgages, where, again, we've seen a step up in terms of higher loan-to-values, and that's been a consistent trend during FY22. Primarily, I think, as the banks ready themselves for the expiry of Help to Buy and knowing that, you know, they need to be operating with higher loan-to-values against that backdrop. And then other areas such as cancellations and down valuations, which we're monitoring on a week-to-week basis. And we're just not seeing any changes in terms of those trends. So hence, you can step back from it and say, if you look at FY22 overall, we are seeing consistent and very strong trends throughout the year. Stephen?
Yes, thanks, David. Morning, Chris. In terms of land and planning for FY23, virtually all the planning we need is in place. We need something like about 160 plots of planning, which we'd expect to have this month. So no big issues on that front. In fact, the planning we need, is the sites have already got an outline planning, so it's only the reserve matters going through. As I say, we'd expect them to come through in the next few weeks, in fact. In terms of outlets, as you can see, we've grown our outlets considerably in Q4. We ended the year at 352 active outlets. In terms of next year, we've got more outlets to open next year than we opened in 22. And in 22, we opened 118 outlets. We've got a few more than that to open in 23, we plan. So we'd expect outlets to grow slightly in 23. So clearly we'll be giving more detail in September. Okay.
That's really helpful. Thank you, gentlemen.
Chris, thank you. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Gregor Kuglitz from USB. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me? Yeah, Gregor, we can hear you. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I've got a question on your land acquisition. So you give us a number of 19,000 plots. You say 1.4 billion. So I think that works out as like 73K per plot. And I guess I'm wondering how that squares with kind of your normal ASP, was something that's obviously a very high number compared to prior years, or whether there's something else going on here. And I guess the underlying question is whether we're starting to see some, you know, erosion in profitability because of perhaps the competitiveness in the land market. That's the first one. Second question is just, I think if we work backwards, it feels to me like you probably delivered, let's say, a 25% growth last year. I don't know if you agree with that, roughly. And I guess I want to get a feel for what the directionality of that is from here, considering your comments around pricing and cost, please. Thank you.
Gregor, thank you. Can I pass those both over to Mike?
Absolutely. Thank you. Morning, Gregor. So if I start on land acquisitions, I mean, I think undoubtedly the average cost per plot that we've acquired this year is higher. And I think that's probably in line with what you would expect because, you know, we've seen higher sales prices through the year, and obviously land's bought on a residual sort of pricing basis. The other thing that's going on in the mix is that we've bought a higher proportion of sites for the David Wilson brand this year compared to the previous year. And they tend to be in more sort of prime locations and do tend to carry a higher land value in any case. And, you know, we bought some very strong locations around sort of Edinburgh and southwest of England and parts of eastern England as well. So I think that's playing into that. In terms of erosion of profitability because of that, I would say that we're still buying in line with our hurdle gross margin rate. So we're not compromising on the hurdles that are coming through. So, you know, we're comfortable with the land that we're acquiring. And then just coming on to your question on gross margin, I mean, I think you're right. The consensus for our gross margin for 22 sits at about 24.5%, which is clearly very strong. And, you know, if you think about FY22, we've had a full year of very good selling prices and strong house price inflation coming through. And the cost price inflation we've only really seen since Christmas. So looking forward into FY23, we're obviously going to face a tougher build cost inflation environment. We're seeing that going up to 9 to 10%. And we'll obviously have a full year of those higher costs coming through as well. So when you factor all of those things in, you know, it's not unreasonable to expect the gross margin percentage to decrease next year. And we'd see it probably moving back towards that hurdle rate of, you know, 23 to sort of 23.5% probably for FY23. So I think that's, broadly speaking, the direction of travel.
Thank you. Can I have a follow-up to question one? Would you be able to tell us what sort of the expected average selling price is rather compared to that 73K?
Well, I mean, look, I think the best...
half a million quid, it sounds like, you know, very high. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the best guidance we can give you on average selling prices, if you look into the forward order book, really, we're not going to give any sort of guidance further forward than that. And in the order book, the average selling price is currently sitting about 375 on a private unit, which is, you know, that's 10% ahead of where it would have been this time last year.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Aynsley Lammin from Investec. Please go ahead. The line is open.
Thanks. Morning, all. Just two for me. Wondered if you just give a bit more colour on the kind of build cost trends, you know, labour versus materials. Obviously, you've got the £1,000, you know, supplement going through for wages. Are you seeing more kind of pressure on labour now versus the material side? And then secondly, just on the kind of mortgage market, you know, obviously interest rates are moving higher. What your view is on how that's affecting the market, how you'd expect that to affect it going into the kind of autumn selling season? You know, is lending appetite still good? And just the kind of customer's reaction to what we've already seen on the interest rate front. Thanks.
Ainsley, hi, good morning. If I pick up in terms of mortgages and mortgage rates, and then Stephen will pick up in terms of build costs and the trends on labour and material. I think, first of all, you've got to set it against the context of the numbers that we're reporting. We're obviously reporting numbers in terms of reservation rates right up to the end of June, and we've said that our trends have been consistent during the course of the year. So the customer interest and customer appetite is high. And we recognise that against that, you know, there are challenges around cost of living, and we've seen interest rate increases. But nonetheless, customer interest and customer appetite to actually complete on transactions is very high. In terms of mortgage availability, I touched on it, but generally I would say mortgage availability is good, and the banks are expanding loan-to-values. So I think we saw some contraction of loan-to-values around the events to do with COVID and the banks having a slightly more cautious approach in terms of the availability of higher loan-to-values. But we've seen a number of the major banks step up in terms of their loan-to-values, most recently Halifax moving their loan-to-values for new-build homes. So that mortgage availability is good for the consumer. I think interest rates, I mean, they are a factor, but we know that the market has operated very successfully with significantly higher interest rates than we're seeing presently. So we continue to monitor the market in terms of availability of mortgages, in terms of consumer demand, obviously on a week-to-week basis, but we don't see anything there that's causing us any concerns. If I pass over to Stephen.
Yes, thanks, David. Morning, Ainsley. Yeah, in terms of bill cost inflation, for us it's been more about material inflation. And as I've said earlier, on previous discussions, we've talked about the priority of course is ensuring we have a good supply of materials. We've seen bill cost inflation move steadily higher quarter by quarter throughout FY22. That's been really dominated by materials, and we've experienced some high levels of inflation in certain materials, particularly the timber, steel, product, and less on other components, appliances and kitchen units, etc. But in terms of what's coming through, clearly there's limited forward visibility. Suppliers are not keen to fix prices for much greater than 3 or even 6 months. And we're seeing that sort of a typical trend throughout the industry, on the basis that they've got very limited visibility of the input costs coming through to them. Labour is certainly less from an inflationary pressure point of view, and the main pressure we've seen on labour is particularly on groundwork trades, foundations, drainage and roads and sewer type trades. So that's where we are in terms of bill cost inflation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Ainsley.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Clyde Lewis from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Morning, David, Stephen, Mike, and I suspect John is lurking there in the background as well. Could I just follow up on Ainsley's question there around sort of bill cost inflation? Because I suppose, you know, Stephen, you made that very interesting comment that it's continued to climb higher quarter by quarter. Is this 9 to 10%, do you think, the peak? Or does it go another, you know, 1-3% higher, do you think, as you go through the new financial year, I suppose? And because, you know, I think we're all trying to work out, obviously, that balance of sort of selling prices versus cost pressures. And, you know, obviously, on one hand, we're seeing some commodities roll over, particularly timber and steel, but will that sort of that softness get offset, I suppose, by increased wage costs? That was the first one. The second one was on land creditors, I suppose, one for Mike, around sort of appetite for sort of land creditors as you go forward, and I suppose a little bit around, you know, do you start to think about changing those hurdle rates on land buying, again, given the uncertainty maybe around build cost pressures?
Hi, yeah. So if I pick up just in terms of the general comment about inflation, particularly build cost inflation, and then Michael pick up, as you say, on land creditors and hurdles. So, look, I don't think we're going to start calling whether this is the peak or it's not the peak. I think if we went back 12 months ago, I mean, who would have said that we were going to report 8% selling price inflation and be closing out talking about 9-10% build cost inflation. So I think we recognise that both on the sales side and on the cost side, inflation has far exceeded estimates. What I would say on materials, which I do think is an important point, is that we understand that the input costs are a driver and very difficult to predict where the input costs will go, particularly in terms of the energy-related costs. But I think also availability is a driver, and there is no question that if you went back 6 months ago, the availability of materials was far more challenged than it is today. And I think you can look at that sort of across the wider sector in terms of availability of materials and say that there is better availability than there was. I think we've always been in a strong position in terms of availability, as I touched on, in terms of our group procurement function. But across the whole industry, availability of materials is definitely an improved position. And that should at least help in terms of dampening price inflation. But in terms of the input cost side, I think we've just got to see how that evolves over the next few months.
So I just pick up on land creditors and Clyde. So, I mean, the level of land creditors that we have has been pretty stable over the last couple of years at sort of 21-22% of the land bank. I mean, I think we're comfortable with it at that level going forward. And I think the advantage, one of the advantages we have in the land market is that the strength of our balance sheet means we are, you know, able to offer cash terms if that helps us secure land or helps us secure it on better pricing. So we look at it very much on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, I don't think looking forward into next year, certainly, we don't really see that proportion of land creditors moving very much. And as I say, you know, we just look at it in the round as we're going through acquiring land.
Okay,
and, sorry, I was just going to say in terms of hurdle rates, I mean, you know, we're not planning to change hurdle rates. We're very comfortable. And obviously, in assessing the hurdle rate, we're putting in current costs, but also current selling price. So, you know, we're very disciplined in applying those hurdle rates to the acquisitions.
Okay.
Thank
you, gentlemen.
Okay.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Glynis Johnson from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. I just have three, if I may, and actually they're quite big picture ones. In terms of the land market, we've had a number of your peers talk about the land market becoming increasingly competitive, but particularly I'm interested in where you've seen this bigger pickup and where you've been focused, the sort of David Wilson, the more prime locations. Is that how we should think about where Barratt is looking to position itself at that top end, that second stepper, bigger homes, or is this just the lumpiness of land buying and things will revert to more normal or lower ASP, you know, product being, or land being purchased going forward? Second of all, just in terms of planning, again, everyone's talked about how tough planning is. So the fact you have so little planning to do for the next 12 months ahead actually sounds very impressive. You know, can you give us an update on where things are in terms of planning, nutrients, phosphates, and all those other things? Is it that you're just, you know, if your budget just has a better assumption in terms of timing than others? Is there something in terms of your geographical exposure that means you haven't seen it as aggressively as others? Just any color on that. And then lastly, politics. Obviously, a few things out of the new housing minister yesterday. I just wonder if you can give us the Barratt view on what came out yesterday and, you know, any implications that you may have worked out so far.
Glynis, thank you. Okay, particularly the last one sounds quite difficult. So if I pick up the question in terms of politics, and then maybe if I just make a sort of an overarching comment in terms of the land market, and then Stephen will pick up on the land market and really how we're positioning in terms of Barratt and David Wilson, and also pick up in terms of planning, and specifically can pick up on the nutrient point. Look, I think in terms of politics that, you know, for us, the immediate impacts of the events of the last couple of weeks have been that we've had another change in terms of Secretary of State and Housing Minister, which, you know, is not something that we welcome. clearly the less change, the better. So that's our sort of our starting position. In terms of Greg Clark coming back in as Secretary of State, albeit we recognise it may be on an interim basis, if there is going to be a change, then we see that as being a very positive change. And Greg Clark has already demonstrated, you know, within a week that he is getting hold of certain issues and moving things forward. And when, you know, Stephen talks about planning and nutrient neutrality and water neutrality, these are fundamentally important issues which can be solved by government, and therefore people being focused on these things are very important. In terms of the wider political agenda, the wider political happenings, I mean, I think we just, like everyone else, need to wait and see as to how it unfolds, because we can spend a lot of time speculating, but ultimately we know there is going to be a change in leadership, and that will be resolved over the summer. If I could pass over to Stephen, and just in terms of the land market, I would say that overarching from our point of view in the land market, that, you know, there is no change of strategy. We have always set out that Barratt is very much a value for money. It's a proposition that is coming in at the larger market level, and house types are typically smaller. And David Wilson is, you know, more aspirational, larger house types, and therefore has a higher price point. So there's absolutely no change in terms of that strategy. Stephen, can I pass over to you?
Yeah. Thanks, David, and good morning, Glenys. Yes, and again, to reinforce what David was just saying there, in terms of the sort of product mix we're going and buying, we're buying everything from Barratt, from a sort of one bed 500 square foot dwelling, right the way up to David Wilson 5 bed 2,500. Square foot. So we operate across the full market. We have a full market mix, and the brand is tailored to the quality of location and sometimes obviously the size of the site. In terms of the land market generally, we've had a lot of success. That just shot a 19,100 plots in the year, and that sort of is on the back of some of the planning consents which came through in the last few years. I think it was 307,000 to March 22, 319,000 consents in the prior year. So we've seen some good sites come through. And I think, as I've indicated in the past, one of the sort of dynamics of the land market we've seen is larger sites coming through. Typically, a lot of sites around 500 units, which is, again, ideally suited to our sort of operation, where we can sort of split the site two ways. We've maybe got, you know, 30% perhaps affordable units on there, and split it 50-50 between Barratt and David Wilson. So a 500 unit site is sort of ideal. But we did a study recently, and that sort of showed the sort of trend of the sites coming through in the planning system, and there's something like 600 sites in various stages of planning, with over 1,000 units coming through. So one of the things we're going to see in future years is larger sites. And again, that suits our business model, where it's ideal for dual branding, potentially three or even four outlets, two Barratt, two David Wilson. In terms of the final thing I'll say on land, our sort of hit rate is running around about 1 to 3.5 offers, so 1 to 3.5, one site of success for every 3.5 offers we make, which is our sort of usual level, which we've operated at for a number of years. So land is good. It's plenty coming through. We've got a number of terms agreed, which we'll also see come through in the next 6 months. In terms of the planning system clearly is no better. If anything, it's worse, with purely a lack of resource in government departments, demoralised planning teams generally in local authorities through lack of resource, and in some cases, political interference, local government political interference in terms of decisions. The other question you mentioned was about nutrient neutrality. I know the HBF estimate, there's about 120,000 homes currently held up in the system due to nutrient neutrality issues which are coming through. I think that's across 74 local authorities now, because that was extended in the last few months, the number of local authorities with nutrient neutrality issues. These tend to be sites which are at the very early stages in terms of sites being allocated, coming through the planning system. A lot of the sites we buy already have an outline consent, so generally in those instances, nutrient neutrality doesn't apply. And if you look at the nutrient neutrality issues from a Barratt perspective, clearly there's nothing in our FY23 year. And when you look out to sort of our portfolio, we have about 10 sites currently impacted, and they're delivering maybe 200 units, 220 units in FY24, FY25 and beyond. So it's not a major issue at the current point for Barratt. They are solvable. We have a couple of sites where there has been issues, and we've managed to come up with solutions that address the concerns. So hopefully that gives you a bit of background.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you, Glynis.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Ami Galla from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Just two from me. The first one was just generally on the bill rates. So the bill rates that we've achieved in the second half, is that fairly an optimal level, or is there any scope for further operational efficiency pushing those rates higher? And the second one was just on demand and pricing. Are there any regional patterns emerging in the trading that you've seen in the recent couple of weeks?
Amy, hi, good morning. In terms of build rates, Stephen will pick that up, and I'll pick up just in terms of the pricing. I think the short answer in terms of pricing is that, you know, there's nothing we're seeing in terms of recent trends with regard to pricing. I mean, I think when you look at it both from a volume and a price perspective, I think we've seen pretty consistent trends, whether that be over the last 4 weeks or over the last 6 months. So I don't think any significant changes in terms of those trends. But obviously we keep monitoring that, and we talk about that on a week to week basis within our executive. Stephen, you just to talk about build rates.
Yep, thanks David. Morning, Amy. In terms of build rates, and as David mentioned in the opening statement, we're very, very pleased with the progress we've made over the past year. Our construction teams and subcontractors, suppliers have done an absolute tremendous job. And we're now exceeding pre-pandemic levels in terms of build rates. So as we said, our build rate, which we measure in equivalent units per week for FY22, was something like 252 EUs per week. That was based on H1. Our first half average was about 341 EUs per week, and second half was 364. Second half generally is a higher productivity. It's better weather. That is pretty typical in line with our historic norms in terms of build levels in H2. So we're back to generally where we were pre-pandemic. And from a sort of build point of view, the other key thing I think we need to mention is it isn't just about build rates, it's about the quality we produce. And you know, we measure that in a number of ways, but one of the key areas is our reportable items, which are measured independently by the NHBC, and we have maintained our position of having the lowest reportable items in the peer group for the last 12 months, measured in terms of reportable items. And of course, as David mentioned, the NHBC Pride in the Jobs, where we had an outstanding performance with 98 Pride in the Job awards. So overall, build has been positive, and we're very pleased that we've got it back to the pre-pandemic levels.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Rajesh Paki from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning. I've got two as well, please. The first one is if you can provide some additional color on the deferral of the London apartment block. Do you see it as a one-off issue, or have you encountered this issue elsewhere? And the second one was around Gladman. Could you talk about the contribution this year and what do you expect it to deliver next year? Thank you.
Hi, good morning. I think if I could sort of split the second question slightly. So just in terms of the first question, I mean, Stephen will pick that up in terms of the London apartment block where we saw the delay over the year end. And then in terms of Gladman, I think Stephen can also just pick up in terms of how Gladman's going generally. And then Mike can maybe just talk in terms of contribution against the acquisition. Stephen?
Yes, thanks, David. Yeah, in terms of the London apartment, yeah, it was one building, 20-storey block of apartments with 221 units. It relates to building control delay, and it's the only building we had with that issue. As I say, it's been sort of delayed from 22, and it'll happen in 23. Unfortunately, it's related to resource issues, and it's something we've typically seen in the public sector these days. It's, you know, it's pretty commonplace where there is a lack of resource, and it, you know, whether it's building control, perhaps, or even planning, there are issues that are industry wide, and you know, it's something we're having to work through to deal with. But the key thing is that the units are built, they're finished, and they're just awaiting legal completion once the building control the notices are issued, which should happen pretty soon, hopefully. In terms of Gladman, before I hand over to Mike, yeah, from a sort of Gladman point of view, we completed the transaction in end of January. We've been integrating the business for the last 5 months. That's gone to plan, and we're very pleased with the way things are going. We've been busy renegotiating some of the promotion agreements and converting them into either options or, in some cases, pre-owned purchases. As I say, at the early stages, but everything's going to plan. We've had a number of successes where we've taken those sites from promotion into our option land bank. Or in one case, there's a site we actually agreed and it contracted last week, which is a 500-unit site in the West Midlands, where the site has an outline planning permission, and we were able to negotiate that site off-market and bring it through into the Barratt Land Bank, as I say, last week. So we're pretty confident that the rationale we gave in January, that the business would contribute around 500 units a year from FY25, will be achieved. And we're on course to deliver that, certainly. And across to Mike.
Thanks, Rajesh. Just picking up on the numbers, I mean, clearly, you know, we paid $250 million for Gladman in January. Still very early days in terms of our ownership overall. As we said at the time, you know, the EBITDA performance of that business is around £20 million per year. We're working through, you know, finalising the acquisition accounting. We'll be out with the numbers in that in September. But it's performing absolutely in line with our expectations at this stage. And you know, as Stephen said, we're pleased with the performance.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question, Arnold Lehmann from Bank of America.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody. Just one left on my side, and it's slightly big picture. In your statement, you confirmed the target of 20,000 home completions for the medium term, and you seem to imply you could go beyond that. I guess the macro is getting a bit worse. As we discussed, there is meaningful cost inflation in the system that could put a bit of pressure on your gross margin. So the question would be, from a strategic standpoint, does it still make sense to chase more volumes? And wouldn't it be time to slightly adjust the focus on, let's say, the supply, the values, the margins, rather than adding more volumes in the system? Thank you.
Yeah, good morning. Well, look, I understand it's just terminology, but, you know, we're definitely not chasing volume. I mean, that's certainly not what we're doing. I mean, I think we set out very clearly back in 16 that our principal focus as a business was the improvement of our margin. Improving our margin for ourselves, but B, improving our margin relative to our peer group. We set that strategy out in 2016, and we've executed against that strategy over the last five or so years. More standard house types and really looking at every cost component within our business in terms of build cost, overheads, et cetera. I think you can see in terms of the relative margin performance that we've executed that well. We've also set out growth targets, but those are relatively low growth targets. We've set around 3% to 5% per annum, and it will clearly take time to move up towards 20,000 completions. We do see that there is growth in the market, that there is an undersupply of housing, and there is opportunities for growth in the marketplace. When you look at our specific guidance in terms of FY 2023, we clearly have got a very strong forward order position. For the reasons that we've already discussed, we're rolling over an apartment block from one year to the next, which in itself is giving us more than 1% growth in terms of completion volumes. I think we're comfortable to sit behind that growth position for FY 2023. Clearly, we've got to continue to monitor the market on a week-to-week and month-to-month basis, which we will obviously continue to do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are currently no more questions in the queue. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. There are no further questions.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much, everyone, and we will be back on the 7th of September. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference. You may now all disconnect.